Hello, I'm Lino Khmoudou. Welcome to Health Chat. The United Nations General Assembly is ongoing this week, and health is on the agenda. Observers say the COVID-19 pandemic has exacerbated the need for countries and stakeholders to invest in health globally. This Tuesday, governments, businesses, development institutions, and philanthropists have gathered for the Africa Investment Summit on Health. The virtual side event of the UNGA aims to develop strategies to increase access to vital health commodities and supplies in Africa. The summit is hosted by ABC Health, the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa, and the U.S. National Institute of Health. I spoke with Aiboje Aig Ilmukwede, chairman of the board of directors for ABC Health, to discuss some challenges and opportunities pertaining to investing in Africa's health system. Take a listen.
Health is what's essential here. And GBC Health, in terms of history, is the Global Business Coalition on Health. And this was the global coalition of corporate bodies that came together to fight HIV/AIDS. Our founding CEO at the time was Ambassador Holbrooke. Having done great work for HIV/AIDS and related illnesses across the globe, particularly in Africa that bears the brunt of the disease.
You talked about the model of GBC Health and you working to apply that in Africa. Can you kind of explain to us that model? What does it entail?
For me personally, and why I'm involved in health, is that health is indeed wealth. There is such an absolute correlation between the health of the citizens of a nation and their wealth. And the, you know, so if you want to, you really want to test the advanced nature of an economy, we're going to look at the health statistics. And that's the first thing I look at, actually. Remember HIV/AIDS about, you know, safe sex, use of syringes, and things like that, okay? At that time, right, through corporate organizations, even in Africa, okay, EBC Health had toolkits, had means of going to teach large corporations with huge employees safe living practices, healthy practices, and then also you have some social issues around every pandemic, even as you find your stigmatization, etc., 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 and then the mental health, mental trauma, counseling, and all that. So these are the things that GBC Health at the time did. There's no sense in reinventing the wheel. So if one corporate has a good practice, okay, it was a platform where you could share knowledge, share ideas.
So when you look at the impact of COVID-19, what is the takeaway for you from a philanthropic perspective as an investor in health?
The beginnings of 2019, I began to advocate more and more around the fact that if we don't fix Africa's weak health system, if we don't fix these foundational issues, we will continue to have this perennial problem whereby when there is a major health issue around the world will rally, deal with that issue, but Africa will continue to bear the brunt of that issue whilst the rest of the world has put it to bed. Malaria, HIV, and so on. And then along comes, you know, COVID. What you see with COVID is you are seeing a repeat of that. We know that the answer is the vaccine. And when you think about vaccine inequity in terms of who has access to vaccines, and then the ability again to mobilize the people to overcome vaccine hesitancy, it's the more advanced nations. Africa is suffering. Africa is lagging behind. In some African countries, you don't even have something that rounds up to 1% in terms of the amount of population that has, you know, has access and has been vaccinated. How are we going to deal with this if we don't cooperate as Africans? How are we going to deal with this if we don't mobilize help, you know, from outside? This notion of coalitions, particularly the private sector, because African governments are much weaker than their global counterparts. So we've really got to rally the corporate world, you know, rally multilaterals, and philanthropists, both African and from outside Africa, to focus their minds on this issue.
The Africa Investment Summit for Health. What will the summit entail in general, and what are some of the main goals?
There are three factors. One is the will of government. The second is the active involvement and investment, and the third is finance. Obviously, government will is in represented by our presidents and their cabinets and, you know, the other arms of government that, you know, make government policy. Business community is comprises entrepreneurs like me and businesses like the big pharma companies, the manufacturers of medicine and medical equipment and so on. Okay, and then finance comes from banks, asset managers. So we've got to put these three stakeholders in one room and ask them. In Africa, we have 1.3 billion people. So health is probably Africa's biggest, you know, consumer sector. Why is it that the manufacturing of medicine, medical equipment, and other ancillary things in the medical value chain, the health value chain, is almost not present in Africa? And as a result of that, from a strategic standpoint, for example, with COVID, where we don't manufacture vaccine, we don't manufacture syringes and so on, you can see that our ability to respond to health issues is very much hampered. So this must be reversed. Bringing government into the room, bringing business into the room, and bringing finance into the room to begin to finance health in Africa.
Mr. Aiboje Aig-Imukwede, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
That was Aiboje Aig-Imukwede, Chairman of the Board of Directors for ABC Health. Amid the latest wave of COVID-19 infections, less than 1% of people in Africa's most populated country, Nigeria, have been fully vaccinated against the coronavirus. Nigerian authorities are scrambling for more vaccines, but say misinformation and myths are discouraging uptake. Timothy Obiezu looks at efforts to dispel the rumors in this report from the capital, Abuja.
Music and jingles in the air addressing one problem: misinformation about the coronavirus vaccine. Here in this camp for displaced people, many have been misled by a viral social media video that portrayed vaccines as a microchip with magnetic qualities. Helen Woko and her team are on a mission to address this problem.
The records we get on the people who have been vaccinated in Nigeria, the percentage is too low compared to, you know, what we're supposed to get. Then we said, let's start from this vulnerable group. These are people who are in an enclosed place.
Woko is the executive director of AISH Initiative, a non-profit focusing on promoting vaccine uptake and humanitarian education. To achieve its goals, the organization is partnering with the Ministry of Health and the National Orientation Agency and is reaching vulnerable groups in rural areas where authorities say it is most needed. Agnes Bartholomew was at the Abuja Camp sensitization program and says she will take the job.
Then bring her, we'll still take her.
If they bring it, I'll take it. But they said they've not brought it. That's what we're waiting for.
Fewer than 1% of Nigerians have so far received complete jabs against the coronavirus, an awfully low mark when matched against the 40% authorities were aiming for this year. Officials of the Nigerian CDC say even though the country is yet to acquire sufficient vaccines, myths and misinformation are also to blame for the slow uptake.
We've been noticing that there are challenges around immunity. There are rumors around the fact that natural immunity is better than the vaccination immunity. And then there are also challenges around what the vaccine does when it gets to the body.
Nigeria is seeing a new surge in coronavirus cases and fatalities caused by the deadly Delta variant. The official number of cases stands at 193,000, low compared to many other countries, but the number is rising fast. Authorities say vaccination is the only way to ensure safety and that the country needs to vaccinate 70% of its 200 million people to achieve herd immunity. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It is time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA Health Correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa. This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the coronavirus pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and noses when we are in crowded areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Welcome back to Health Chat. Human rights activists in Botswana have warned the government against making COVID-19 vaccination mandatory. This comes as some citizens reject the jab on religious grounds. From Gaborone, Botswana, report on Kondisi Dube has the details.
Human rights organization Botswana Network on Ethics, Law and HIV AIDS, or BONELA, says it is prepared to take the government to court if compulsory COVID-19 vaccination is introduced. BONELA Director Cindy Ngelemi says there are other ways to fight the coronavirus.
Vaccination is not the only alternative. There are other strategies for curbing the spread of COVID-19 that have been documented to be effective. These include wearing masks, social distancing, and sanitizing, among others. There isn't enough justification for limiting rights in this instance.
Gelemi says prohibiting citizens from accessing certain services due to their decision not to vaccinate violates their rights.
Not allowing people who are not vaccinated to access certain services or to access certain spaces is a violation of their human rights. It is discrimination of the highest order. And should we be aware as BONELA that there are people who are being exposed to such treatment, we will take the necessary measures, including legal redress.
She adds the government should, instead of considering mandatory vaccination, educate the public about the benefits of inoculation.
Getting vaccinated for COVID-19 does not stop one from getting the virus. Neither does it stop one from transmitting the virus. And it also does not stop one from being sick from the virus. Therefore, there isn't enough justification for us to make vaccination mandatory. What we are advocating for as a human rights organization is that governments, including other critical players such as NGOs, should focus on educating people about the importance of vaccination so that people can make their own decisions voluntarily to vaccinate.
The government admits some people have refused to take the jab, with the majority citing religious reasons. Recently, the Minister of Education, Fidelis Mulao, said 90% of teachers had been vaccinated, but some had refused to get the shots. Despite a rise in vaccination hesitancy, the government says receiving the COVID-19 doses remains voluntary. Botswana is looking to accelerate its vaccination program after receiving 500,000 doses of the AstraZeneca and Sinovac vaccines in the past 2 weeks. For VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Gaborone, Botswana.
The Zimbabwe government says all civil servants should be vaccinated before they can come to work. This has sparked mixed reactions among the working class. Reporter Kudzai Zivinashe has more details.
Monica Mutswangwa is the Minister of Information. She announced the new government stance towards unvaccinated civil servants at a post-cabinet media briefing.
Pursuant to the previous announcement that all civil servants should be vaccinated, Cabinet further resolved that no unvaccinated civil servants will be allowed to come to work.
Vivid Gwede is a political analyst. He tells VOA how the new proclamation stands to infringe on people's rights.
The issue of the vaccine must remain within the zones of encouragement, not coercion. People have a fundamental right to make a decision about their bodies. There are people who genuinely, because of their status or their current conditions, cannot take the vaccine. And that shouldn't be a reason to exclude them from working for the government or going back to work.
Obed Masaraure is the president of the Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe. He tells VOA the new declaration will face resistance.
The move by the government to try to bar unvaccinated civil servants from working is unconstitutional, and it will be resisted politically and legally. The attempts at the coercion will be resisted, and if they are going to fail, we will not allow the working class to be abused by the government of the day.
Masaraure says government should focus its efforts on raising awareness of the vaccine and addressing any concerns unvaccinated civil servants may have. Critics worry the segregation will continue to the private sector if not challenged. For many civil servants, still on the fence about getting the jab, will find themselves in a dilemma, getting the jab and remain employed or going jobless. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zunawashe from Harare.
Observers say the coronavirus pandemic has improved awareness of the value of traditional medicine in Africa. In Cameroon, two products from the traditional pharmacopoeia are approved as complementary therapies for COVID-19. One of them is Corocure, the result of research carried out by Cameroonian cardiologist Dr. Eloge Mfopu. Our correspondent in Cameroon, Emmanuel Jules Tapp, visited his clinic.
David is on his third day in this hospital. After testing positive for COVID-19, he is taken care of in this clinic where Corocure has been developed, now a part with the regular protocol for treating COVID-19 patients in Cameroon.
He's doing better. He was tired. He was shivering. He couldn't even get up. His whole body was hurting. Now he can get up and he's eating.
The inventor of Corocure has been a cardiologist for 25 years. Modestly, he relishes the scientific recognition of his research, confirmed by convincing results.
During the experimental phase, we had more than 1,500 patients that were cured. The efficacy rate is 97.3% when the medication is taken in the mild stage, moderate stage, or moderate to severe.
Last year, Corocure was tested in around 30 patients with symptoms of COVID-19, such as difficulty breathing. The Minister of Public Health authorized the use of Corocure for a period of 2 years after a favorable opinion from the National Medicines Commission.
It is a plant called Fimus vulgaris, which in the context of COVID-19 contains four active ingredients. Polyphenol, tannin, flavonoid, and then terpene derivatives are powerful antioxidants. Because when you have COVID, you have a production of what we call free radicals. You have to neutralize them to avoid inflammation in the body. Polyphenol, tannin, and the flavonoids are also immunomodulators. You have a strong reaction of the body, immunity, and a significant increase in the level of lymphocytes. According to the results of the research that I carried out, which fight COVID, it is an antiviral which leads to intracellular immunization of the virus. You therefore understand the place of this molecule when it is put in the context of COVID-19.
The manufacturing time for Corocure varies between 10 to 12 days. An agricultural production unit will soon be operational. According to Dr. Eloge Mfopu, sufficient quantities of Corocure are available to be able to respond to another wave of COVID-19.
The Democratic Republic of the Congo has been hit hard by the third wave of COVID-19 pandemic with the Delta variant. Faced with a very weak healthcare system and the shortage of oxygen in many hospitals, many people with symptoms of the coronavirus prefer to resort to traditional medicine, which they consider less expensive and still effective. Zanem Neti Zaidi tells us more in this report.
Here in the Virunga market in Goma, in addition to the food being sold, there are lots of herbs. These plants are used by the townspeople to treat and prevent COVID-19.
We first boil these plants with water. We make the patient sit on a small chair, and then we spread a sheet or a blanket over the patient. That retains the heat. Then we put a hot pot in the oven. The patient will open the lid and inhale the heat coming out of the pan. This is what helps the patients to heal. This is an old practice that our ancestors used.
The famous Mvuke method, which means heat in Swahili, has already shown its effectiveness according to several people here. Patients choose 6 to 7 plants, such as cypress, white eucalyptus leaves, mango, guava, and lemongrass, which are boiled as a heat bath. Sun has recently felt symptoms of the coronavirus. He says that he is gradually regaining his health through the practice of Mvuke.
I've been taking this heat bath for about a week. I no longer feel the joint pain. I no longer have headaches and coughs. I find a positive result. Lately, the hospitals are overcrowded. That's why I decided to treat COVID-19 myself, thanks to this traditional treatment.
Even though this practice is praised by some in the community, some doctors are not in favor of it to treat COVID-19.
For some time, we have seen the use of Mvuke as a treatment for coronavirus. It is true that the plants used for this purpose are natural, and several drugs are made from these plants. But the use of these plants for COVID-19 is not really encouraged because their active principle is not yet known. In hospitals, we have approved treatments for COVID-19, so we call on the population to consult health professionals.
In Goma, the care of coronavirus patients is still overwhelming, and hospitals are constantly filled with patients. Several hospitals are receiving dozens of patients a day, and officials say the number of deaths is increasing at an alarming rate.
Healthcare workers in Zimbabwe took time recently to pay tribute to colleagues who succumbed to COVID-19 while fighting with shortages of medicines, equipment, and protective personal gear in hospitals. Reporter Kudzazie Zinvashe has more details.
The singing is from a vigil ceremony in Harare, where healthcare workers paid tribute to their departed colleagues. Dr. Bismarck Matereke says the gaps left by their deaths is evident.
We walk the corridors in the hospitals and you are surprised that you can't see some of the faces anymore. We sat down to come up with this event to really try and show the nation that outside when they see doctors, but we are also human beings, and we also suffer from all these emotions. We have colleagues who are suffering mentally and psychologically.
Dr. Enoch Maida addressed the healthcare workers present and hundreds more joining online.
We also have lost a number of members, colleagues, even in the various medical domains. But at times, you just take the comfort that it's a war. We have to continue standing, and it is our prayer and hope that we don't lose hope, but we continue to give our all in the hope that once upon a time, as we have seen in times past, this pandemic and all the other illnesses that we continue to fight will come to pass.
Dr. Shinga Inyaguse spoke on the sidelines of the event. She says the pandemic robbed the medical fraternity of a wealth of skill and knowledge.
We lost some of the most experienced colleagues, people who were instrumental in setting our programs in our medical school, people who were instrumental in raising the next generation of doctors involved in training. The irreplaceable loss that we've suffered, and we would really need to actively fill this gap that our colleagues have left.
Nyakusa says infrastructure in health institutions has significantly improved from the beginning of the pandemic, which is encouraging. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinavashe from Harare.
Finally, here in the United States, the Los Angeles Unified School District will require all students over the age of 12 to be fully vaccinated by January if they want to attend school, making it the largest school district in the nation to issue such a mandate. Angelina Bagdasarian talked to experts and residents about the mandate. Anna Rice narrates the story.
Schoolgirls Zaina and Sarah happily welcomed the news that the Los Angeles Unified School District will require all students over the age of 12 to be fully vaccinated by January if they want to attend school.
Here to prevent everyone to get COVID, and I don't know, I think we should get rid of COVID as soon as possible. So I'm vaccinated, everyone in my family is vaccinated.
I feel like it's better for people's health.
Starting from January 2022, school children in the Los Angeles Unified School District will only be able to attend school if they show proof of vaccination. That will make it the largest school district in the nation to issue such a mandate.
This is a tough decision on multiple fronts. It is easy to wait for someone to tell us what to do. LA Unified is leading because we must. Our communities cannot wait.
The mandate will affect 225,000 school children from grade 6 through 12. Local authorities report that many children over 12 have already gotten their shots, but some 80,000 children remain unvaccinated. A large proportion of parents support the new mandate.
I think it is good. It's good for them because it's more security vaccinated than not.
Others, however, strongly oppose the new rules.
I do not support it. I don't think there's enough research yet to really understand what the effects are. I'm not anti-vaccine by any means. I just think we need a little bit more research.
Those who oppose mandatory vaccinations for school children are also fighting against the face masks regulation that is currently in place in California. All school students and staff must wear face masks at school and take a weekly COVID test. Infectious diseases professor at UCLA, Timothy Brewer, believes, however, that soon the vaccination will be mandatory, not only for children over 12, but also for younger children, once it is approved by scientists.
Studies are ongoing right now to look at children younger than 12 and vaccine protection and safety in these age groups. I think once we have those data, then we'll see mandates for younger children as well.
Brewer believes other school districts around the country will soon follow Los Angeles and make vaccinations for school children mandatory. For Angelina Bogdasaran in Los Angeles, Anna Rice, VOA News.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For the latest news and coverage on the coronavirus pandemic, visit voanews.com. Check us out at facebook.com/voahealthchat and let's keep the conversation going. Thank you all for joining us and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu in Washington, with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and wash your hands more frequently and strive to make every day a healthy day.
On the next Straight Talk Africa. As countries worldwide work to get shots in arms, many are running into a problem of trust and vaccine hesitancy. Is fake news behind it? And is misinformation on social media hurting vaccination drives across Africa? Join me, Heidi Adams, on the next Straight Talk Africa, this Wednesday at 18:30 UTC.
Stay informed and up to date Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC with VOA's International Edition. Our correspondents bring you the news from around the globe, plus we delve into the context of the day's biggest stories with interviews with experts that place the story into context to understand why it matters. VOA's International Edition, your best source for news and information.
Greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young, host of the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in Caribbean right here, Mondays through Fridays at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC for an action-packed 30-minute program of African, American, and international sports highlights.